I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased you can join us for this four-part series with Dr. Claire Skinner and Dr. Dane Chalkley. This podcast is part one of a four-part series on M&M leadership and case selection, right material and right people. In this segment, right material, Claire and Dane talk about the importance of choosing the right cases and ensuring that you have the right people engaged in the meeting. Claire describes the importance of empathy and her determination that no one should ever have a surprise in the M&M by ensuring that clinicians are clear on what cases are discussed. Dane also then emphasises the importance of making the meeting psychologically safe, and it's about choosing the right cases for the right person and thinking carefully of the timing of the case selection, as this will impact on the capacity to learn. Claire and Dane talk about their experiences with the safety sciences and human factors to enable safe discussions from that systems perspective. This includes identifying cases where there is positive learning experiences.
Thank you both for being here. And I look forward to having a conversation with you today around your experiences with M&M, particularly in the context of when we look at our M&M guidelines, we've established some guiding principles around effective M&Ms, and that is guided by the literature, but also from the experience of clinicians like yourself who have led the way and presented some fantastic examples at our forum that we had a couple of years ago. As a starting point, we really want to focus and emphasise the importance of psychological safety. You both have a lot to do with culture and culture in the workplace and wellbeing of staff. And I'm really wondering from your experiences, what some of the things that have worked and that you think would really support clinicians who are leading M&Ms in making that space a safe space for clinicians.
I think the main thing when you're leading a meeting like an M&M meeting is to do it with empathy. So I think we've all experienced that sensation of sitting in an M&M meeting and hearing the start of a case and thinking, oh my goodness, is that the person I saw? And then you, instantly your body goes to jelly, you stop thinking properly, you're terrified. And for me, as I've been a director of an emergency department for several years, and as someone who led the M&M in that emergency department, I was absolutely determined that no one would ever have a surprise in the M&M meeting. That was really important to me, to choose the cases that we talked about really carefully. So only choose the cases where you're actually going to learn from it, not where you're just going to embarrass or, you know, shame is a negative motivator. And then the other thing was to make sure that that person's voice was included. So if you're going to review a case and present it in the M&M, make sure that person knows and they're actively involved in reviewing the case and you hear their side of the story. Because it's very easy sitting in an M&M meeting to pick someone's decision-making to bits and forget the context in which they did that. Because everyone who works in healthcare is motivated by wanting to look after patients and provide good care. They make decisions for a reason. I think you've got to assume that people are well-motivated, intelligent, trying to do a good job. And so you owe them the respect of including them in your decision-making about the M&M and being empathetic to how that process is going to feel for them at all times.
I think you have to look at what your intention of an M&M meeting is and what the actual purpose is, what the outcome is. And I think most people would assume that an M&M meeting is mostly actually about interprofessional learning than it is about changing outcomes for patients, because the evidence for that is relatively scanty. There's definitely some evidence behind improving systems, but most M&Ms are, by definition of their title, are focused on negative outcomes. They're a safety one approach, which is the retrospective analysis of error. You cannot retrospectively analyze error in a complex socio-technological system like a hospital with your retrospectoscope and come to a conclusion that this is the issue. So therefore you have to work out, well, what am I hoping to achieve from this meeting? And that is number one, and it's beautiful to see it on the guideline from the Clinical Excellence Committee. Number one is the safety of the people who are actually at the meeting. And that's the absolute imperative. And that should be the first thing and the main thing that people are considering when running a meeting. So that goes directly back to what Claire was saying. And anonymity is very important, about the choosing the right case for the right person. So there's a learning from that case rather than just airing dirty laundry, which is what some M&Ms can be like historically. It's really important to make sure that the safety, the psychological safety of everyone in the room is preserved. And that means that people should volunteer or should be willing and able to contribute if they want to, or be willing and able to not be there should they want to as well.
You don't learn if you're feeling ashamed, and you don't learn if you're feeling frightened.
Mm. I mean, the term second victim was coined 20 years ago, and it's gone through some periods of, you know, not being popular and being less popular, and now we have third victims. But irrespective of the terminology, the whole point is that, as Claire said, you have to assume that everyone in the room went into becoming a healthcare professional to look after patients. And anything that you're looking at in an M&M, which is a retrospective look at error, has to be done with absolute emotional intelligence and delicacy to protect the psychological safety of a group of people who are there to look after patients. I think part of what you're leading to, I think, Claire, is actually case selection. And that's, you've got to work out, am I going to cause any harm from talking about this case? And are there any learning points? And I wouldn't choose a case unless there were some positive learning points, even if it was a very hard case. And the death of a child, for example, there can be some really good positive learning points about how things went well despite the difficulties. But you also have to think about, we don't just want this to be a debrief. We want this to be something that is useful and positive, and ultimately, despite the sadness and the emotions behind the case, is something that everyone can learn from in a safe way.
And that's a really key point you've raised too, Dane, which is you can have a bad outcome, but things done well.
Yeah.
And that's something we don't acknowledge enough, and particularly with things, mandatory referral to RCAs for SAC ones, for example, it can be a SAC one that was a bad outcome, but things were still done very well. Yep. And people can feel very vulnerable when that's investigated in a way which assumes that they did something wrong.
And that's a challenge, isn't it? That often the focus is on the outcome rather than the things that were done.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Is if the focus, so if the switch that gets flicked to start the RCA process is a negative outcome, then by default, the approach and the feeling within that investigation is negative. Where was the error in this? Was the error? And there may not be error, and there very often isn't error. Mm. And so at that point, you've got to say, well, is this the right case for my M&M? Mm. Is it useful? I personally wouldn't put any case that was an RCA or clinical incident review into an M&M unless it's absolutely finished, done and dusted. And this isn't for everyone to just give their opinion about where things should have been done better. It's more about to learn, as Claire said, from the human factors.
Case selection is really important, really, though. Important, I'm like you. Case, I find it really difficult when I'm told that this must go in your M&M. And I have to admit, I've got several different ways of presenting a case in the M&M, and one is almost like doing a hypothetical where I let the case unfold and let people talk about what they would have done. But the other is where I literally just rattle off the story where I don't want that degree of input into it. And there's some cases I present in the M&M where we're just really going through the motions. And that's probably not very politically correct to acknowledge here, but I think that's actually about protection of who was involved. So sometimes those big hypothetical cases, the people in the room make the same decisions as a clinician who was involved. And that's almost cathartic for the person who's involved. That journey of discovery with your colleagues and go, right, this isn't me. The system was setting me up to fail here. That's cathartic. But there are times where you just want to tell the story, where there is a learning, but you can just tell it from the story. You don't need to actually deep dive. And it's also important to work out how much time you give each case as well. Like, everything isn't equal. And when I see people present an M&M, I go to other teams' M&Ms, and I've watched other people present the M&Ms in emergency departments, and where everything is given, 10 slides, that's not there. For me, there's a one slide case and there's a 10 slide case, and you've got to really choose which one is which and how. Like, sometimes you want the Socratic midwifery of going through everything in detail, and other times you literally just need to go through the motions of telling the story.
I quite like using a similar approach to Claire of the clinical hand grenade, where you take people along this beautiful path, knowing full well that they're going to make exactly the same errors that the clinician did. If you're talking about a safety one case where there is an error, and letting people go, and then they learn by realizing that the clinicians that didn't quite get it right got so much of it right in the leader, and then it just fell apart because it wasn't as apparent as people thought it would be with the retrospectoscope. So I think that I love that.
So I've got a question for you, Dane, which is how live are your cases? Do you do stuff as it happens, or do you wait a little while and let it percolate through the system? Like, do you have a take on that?
In terms of when things have just happened?
Yeah.
I would never present a safety one case until it's absolutely finalized, done, and in stone. I think to do so is dangerous potentially, and if it's still raw, that you have. So the first thing that happens when you, if you've ever been on an RCA panel, and I try to be on every RCA panel for our emergency department because I just want to try and ensure that the people who have been interviewed are protected, is the first thing that you feel when you are phoned or contacted to be on RCA, you know, to be the someone who's interviewed for a clinical case. Oh my God, what have I done? Is this the end of my career? Who did I hurt? Was it me? Whose fault was it? You can't take that stuff into a meeting. It has to be resolved. Yeah. The findings have to be come to some sort of conclusion. And the person who is involved has the right to choose whether or not they want to even be there, whether or not they want to even present, but they have to have received some sort of resolution. And debriefing and counselling for people who are involved in these is incredibly important. And I go back to the term second victim. Again, it's not a term that's particularly in the use at the moment. It goes through phases, but the principle behind protecting the people who could get hurt by virtue of their error is incredibly important. And to bring it into a meeting like that without, you know, really stringent safety is so important.
I agree. You let the difficult stuff settle for a while.
This isn't a counselling session.
That's been really hard, actually, with the time-limited RCAs. So often there's a pressure on you to get something presented in your M&M for the point of signing off the RCA, and it's like, well, no, it actually needs to settle because otherwise it will just be harmful.
Yeah, or just give it the one line that, you know, that really doesn't allude to very much.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, because it's our responsibility as chair people to say, I know my team. I know who's there, and I understand the core principles of what I'm hoping to achieve from this. Is this suitable for that environment, irrespective of whether it's been mandated that I tell you about it? How, in what detail I share it with is up to me. And that's matched to the people who are going to hear it.
Because the reality is, if you're the chair of the M&M, you're talking to everyone who's involved in these cases all the time. Like, the M&M is literally the top of the iceberg in terms of what is going on with the quality in the department. The vast majority of quality in the department is conversations and counselling and debrief and a whole bunch of other stuff.
That's right.
So I think that's something I find a little bit strange as well, is the notion, if it's not in the M&M, you haven't taken it seriously. It's like, often the biggest cases, the biggest problems, that I've taken them very seriously. They only make it very superficially into the M&M. The real talking is happening in a much more safe space.
Again, safe. It's got to be safe.
Yeah, the M&M space is what's really critical, is the readiness of the group and the timing. Being very careful around where the particular incident is at in the system, and whether individuals that are involved are really ready to talk about it and be involved in some learning.
And it's, if you consider how much learning people are going to get, how much system improvement, whether or not that translates to improved patient outcomes, then you've got that on one side of the seesaw, and one side of the fulcrum and the balance. Then you've got to think about the individuals involved, and they contribute the most of your decision making strategy, I think.
Thanks for listening to this podcast series on M&M leadership and case selection. Right material and right people. I really hope you enjoyed it. Please note that this is one of a 4-part series, and I hope that you have the opportunity to listen to the other 3 segments as I continue this conversation with Dane and Claire and explore the conversation around choosing the right cases. Dane and Claire talk about the importance of leadership in M&Ms. They also talk about their experiences of safety sciences and the importance of human factors. We explore multidisciplinary participation And it's a real opportunity to listen in and really hear the level of vulnerability and experiences that Dane and Claire talk about as they explore their M&M leadership. Listen as Claire and Dane discuss their insights and the lessons learned that they've had along the way in supporting M&Ms. I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased that you can join us in this conversation with senior leaders as they explore the guiding principles of effective morbidity and mortality meetings in action. This podcast series has been developed to explore the experiences and insights from leading M&M meetings. Look out for more podcasts as we continue this conversation with clinicians as they share their journey and learning. I hope you find it useful, and if you'd like to contribute to this conversation, please let me know. Thank you.